Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999.
Hello, and thanks for joining us for another episode of Friends with Money, Money Magazine's podcast to help you earn, save, and achieve your financial goals. My name is Tom Watson, a senior journalist here at Money Magazine, and as always, it's great to be with you. According to the latest figures from the ATO, 2.2 million Australians owned an investment property in the 2020-2021 financial year. Of course, not every one of those investors is an expert. In fact, there are probably plenty of mistakes that investors can and do make along the way, as I'm sure many would freely admit, or maybe not so freely. So to give current and budding investors a bit of a run-through on some of the most common errors, and of course, how to avoid them, is someone with their fair share of experience in the property investment world, buyer's agent and co-director of the Investors Agency, Darren Venter. Darren, welcome. It's lovely to have you on the show.
Tom, thank you, mate. Very nice to be hosted on such a prestigious podcast. I am an avid listener, so I do really appreciate having me on board.
You're very kind, Darren. We'll definitely have you back on the show now that you said that. That's what you're... The check is in the mail. So first of all, Darren, let's start off with what I imagine is one of the most important places to get things right, which is the research phase of things. You know, personally, I struggle a bit making a decision on something as small as a coffee grinder, which I did on the weekend without doing a load of research beforehand. So I can't even imagine the process of buying an investment property. So what are some of the fundamentals that investors should be doing when it comes to researching a property?
Tom, I think, it's a very broad scope and it's a very broad question to answer. I think the best place to start is obviously understanding where your intention is on the purchase of that asset. Now, obviously, there's a lot of different types of property investing that you can go into. And, you know, there are a lot of investors out there that have expansive portfolios, and some of those portfolios need some things at certain times. And I think that's the most important part to start at, is understanding what you actually need in your portfolio at that time.
Okay.
Break that down. So that's going to help you get a better understanding of the types of due diligence that you actually need to look into. So if we look at a property purchase, for example, you know, quite an avid investor, which has got a good lump sum of equity on their hands, and potentially they're trying to create more cash flow to help stimulate their portfolio, they might be going into, you know, purchases of bigger land sizes. Now, one thing that we do know about land sizes, obviously it carries good value, but the property itself also then carries restrictions on the bigger land size it gets. And depending on the council that property is in, there's also going to be a bunch of different restrictions around what you can do on that property. So understanding where you're where you're going to be heading towards is going to help you to uncover the types of due diligence to step into. Things such as, you know, can you subdivide the property? If you can subdivide the property, what are the restrictions of doing so? If you don't need to subdivide it, what else can I put on that property? Can I put a granny flat on it? How many grannies will the council allow? You know, you could literally go all the way down to how much infrastructure is within the area. If there's any plumbing that you need to consider, because in some cases, acreage lots, which are obviously really good for subdividing, have septic tanks. But then the councils have restrictions on what you can do with a property that has septic tanks. So it really does just depend on where you're heading towards.
There's so much in there already. And I feel a little bit overwhelmed, and I'm not even an investor myself. But one of the things that we were talking about before the show, Darren, which I'm really interested in, is you were explaining the importance of doing due diligence when it comes to where the property is actually located in terms of any potential natural disasters, flooding, things like that. Is that something that people kind of often miss doing in the first place?
Yeah, it is. And again, the council's got a heap of information that anybody can just dig up and do their own due diligence on and find their own information by calling the council. You know, selling agents obviously have that information too. But getting the right understanding of what's the characteristics of those areas, like you're saying, flood lines, those are, you know, it comes down to also the investor and how much risk they want to attach to their sort of their portfolio and their step forward, their path forward. But the big part about understanding what a flood zone could mean to a property is that, you know, when you insure that property, it's going to be insured based off the characteristics of the land, for example, the flood zones. And when you get a valuation on that property, your premiums are going to go up because potentially it just depends on which insurance brokerage you're going to be going through. But that brokerage may have a higher or a lower risk threshold, increase your premiums, and therefore your premiums are going to be higher. But if that also means that the valuation to rebuild that house is going to be more expensive, then you've got to consider that too at some stage, because the value of a property that gets insured is not valued at its current value. You should be assessing it at the value, what it costs to rebuild that property, because you're not going to be able to rebuild at 1985 prices. You're going to have to buy a rebuild at 2023 rates.
That's an excellent point and something that I probably wouldn't have thought of myself initially. So I'm glad you mentioned it. As listeners will know, we do our fair share of episodes on shares and equities. And one of the things that our guests like to emphasize time and again is the importance of diversification. But does that same rule, I guess, apply to property as well? Is it something that people don't necessarily think about?
It's something that people don't think about enough, Tom. It is very important. And just like any, you know, stock or commodity or whatever it is that you're investing in, there's going to be ups and downs. The property market is very much the same. When we actually look at what drives property, it's all about demand. Now, demand will come into an area and it'll hike the prices up, which creates your equity. But once that property value gets to a point of that area being unaffordable to the population inside it, that growth will start to slow down. And that means that other areas will start to then react in the same way. And if it is not, you know, if you're putting all your eggs into one basket and you're basically counting on all your equities within one postcode to raise up at the same level, I can almost guarantee that's not going to be the case for your entire property cycle. You know, if you look at a cycle, they range between 5 to 10 years. You know, COVID's done some magical fast forwarding for us, but the typical cycle, if you're going to be trying to raise up equities throughout your portfolio, if you've got 5 properties all within one area, you're not going to be able to do that in a lucrative way to be able to repurpose that equity into further purchases to help you expand.
So is it really important then that people, you know, look perhaps outside their immediate vicinity or outside one particular area when it comes to buying?
Yeah, definitely. Look, get out of your backyard, because your backyard is going to be familiar to you. But that's not the thing that's going to grow your wealth. Not necessarily. You know, sometimes they, you know, an investor could be located in the right area, but that due diligence and that research of the property market, understanding what's going on inside that market, is really going to help you. There's a lot of information out there from media and publications that can guide you into the right areas. More importantly, though, is if you can actually afford to invest inside those areas. So affordability is a big portion, not just for the growth of the asset, but also for your own wealth and being able to hold that property, because that's going to allow you to be looked at by the banks in certain ways and essentially extract that equity. And if you're positioning those properties across the nation in different markets, which are, you know, creating different returns at different rates at different times, then you're going to have a way more steady portfolio on your hands come 5 to 10 years' time.
People might be familiar with, obviously, if they already own, you know, their own residential property that they live in. But if they are looking outside of, you know, their own area, their own state, is there anything that might trip them up or might be different that they should probably be aware of?
Yeah, when you are investing interstate, the main concern, or rather the main thing to look out for, is the legalities of doing so. Now, we all know that buying property is not rocket science. It's not hard. Anybody can really buy property. But doing it safely and doing it within the council regulations, or rather the state's regulations in the case we're talking about here, is going to keep you safe in that process. Now, if you have a look in New South Wales, for example, if you're buying an investment property, or if you're buying any property, really, you're doing your building and pest and your due diligence up front, and then you put your offer through based off the fact that you've already run your due diligence. If you're looking at South Australia, WA, Queensland, for example, you're basically exchanging a contract and then you're running your due diligence. Now, there's different time frames against all of those different states and territories to be able to do certain due diligences. And in some states, being able to try and pull out on a building and pest inspection clause is very difficult. For example, WA has a very tight leniency. They're not very lenient at all in actually allowing you to pull out on anything other than structural or potentially electrical and plumbing.
Oh, wow.
Whereas in Queensland, you could almost pull out on, you don't like that there's two tiles missing from the roof. it becomes a game of due diligence again. And that's being familiar with the areas that you are buying in is really going to help you when you are buying interstate.
Darren, we've already talked about diversification. We've touched on the research side. I'm interested in, I guess, the buying side of things now. So in your experience, are there any opportunities that buyers miss when, you know, trying to work out how much they want to pay for a property or, you know, actually submitting an offer?
Yeah, the biggest mistake that we see is a lot of investors go into it not understanding the net results, the net returns. On paper, a property that costs potentially $500,000, which could create 5.5% yield, depending on, again, where that property is located, there's other holding costs associated to that asset. There are things such as management fees, which range all the way from 5.5% or 6% up to 13%, 14%. Depending on where you're buying it, that is going to cost you more to hold that property, even though the rental income should hopefully be helping to cover that. Other things such as buying in undesirable and insurable areas, so areas which are not desired for insurance, can really push up your premium. Again, taking your holding costs from what could be a 5.5% yield down to a -1% or -0.5% yield, putting you into the negative. And if that's your objective, to make sure that you're buying a property which can look after itself, which a lot of our clients are doing, is basically you need to make sure that you understand those holding costs. When putting an offer in on a property, you do always want to have your solicitor, cross-checking everything and dotting the I's and crossing the T's. There's a lot of clauses that are not familiar to the everyday investor that can get put into a contract. And those are very dependent, again, on the regions that you're buying in. We keep going back to these properties being in different areas, but it really plays a big part in what you can and can't do and what the legal contracts and constraints will allow you to do. So, make sure that you are doing the inspection before the property, or if you aren't being able to do the inspection before the property, put an inspection clause on that contract. Put an offer through subject to inspection. The difference there is that obviously it is going to be less desirable to the seller to exchange on a contract and then still have the ability to have that bid or that buyer potentially pull out from that offer. But in hindsight, and if you look back and you make that wrong decision, it's going to be a little bit more difficult to try and fix that mistake when it's cost you $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, or potentially even more because you can't do what your whole investment objective was by the purchase of that asset.
I can imagine. God. How about on the finance side of things, Darren? Do you see investors missing any tricks when it comes to obtaining or structuring their finances, especially, I guess, for those who own multiple properties?
When it comes down to multiple properties or just investors that have a lower income threshold, it's quite easy for them to get serviced by the glitz and the glamour, if you want to call it that. The higher lending rates from a bank is going to give you more comfort in buying into that bank and using their money. But again, going into the holding cost scenarios, generally, if you're going to get lent more money, it means you're going to be charged more interest off that loan. Now, generally speaking, that comes down. If you look into the lenders, you're going to find more that the second and third tier lenders are going to have higher interest rate repayments off those loan amounts. So my tips would be, try stay at your first tier lenders for as long as you can, even if it means that you're going to be serviced at a lower amount to buy that property. That's going to help you basically ride out that portfolio for longer. And then next, a really easy one here is to just speak to a broker. Mm-hmm. They are going to be able to get you better rates across their lending panel. If you're going direct to bank, the bank's going to give you only the rates that bank provides. if you're going to a broker, they're going to be able to give you multiple different options, obviously. Make sure you're also trying to use your personal funds as much as you can before you go into trying to build out your SMSF. Mm. Your idea and your main goal here is to try to max out your personal finances as much as you can. That's going to give you more leverage if you need to inject any funds into your SMSF to give you more power at the end of the day. Keep in mind, though, that when you do buy in an SMSF, it is very difficult to use the finance and use the equity and use the cash flow returns from that purchase inside an SMSF into your everyday normal portfolio. So make sure that you're buying in the right structure and that your purchase is aligned with the asset class or the trust or the structure that you're buying it within, and make sure that you can recapitalize off the returns in the way that you want to.
Final question before we let you go, Darren. Obviously, there are plenty of property investors who are happy to go it alone. But for those who don't know, what kind of benefits can a buyer's agent bring to the table? Because I'll be honest, I didn't know much at all about buyer's agents before the start of the year. And now I'm learning. So I'm sure there are other listeners out there who aren't quite as aware as I was.
Yeah, Tom, look, like I said earlier in the podcast, anybody can really buy property. It's not that hard. But buying it in the right markets is where the challenge really becomes evident. And at the moment, we're buying in property markets where there's a time frame to purchase of, you know, approximately 20 days on market. Now, if you understand how that works, is that in a lot of markets, 20 days on market also includes a 32-day contract exchange time frame. So that means that there's a large portion of properties which are selling off market, because typically 20 days on market is not enough for that to thematically make sense. So there is a lot of off-market purchases, and being in front of those selling agents that are willing to sell off-market is a big advantage of using a buyer's agent. Now, at the moment, I think we're probably doing around 60% off-market purchases [S2] Wow. [S1] Per week at the investors agency, and we're able to basically get into the doors, you know, in front of our competitors and in front of the general investor. So being able to get into those markets and capitalize is a big plus, because at the end of the day, if you're not getting into that equity production of, let's say, 2% on a $500,000 property per month, you're missing out on $10,000 worth of equity gain in that period. So it does help to know where to buy, because obviously that's the number one. But then obviously being able to execute on when you do know where that is the tricky part. And I think that's where the value of an investor's agency comes from.
Brilliant. Darren, my head is full of bits and pieces of information, much fuller than when we started off. So thank you so much for coming on and explaining everything so well for us. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Tom, for having me. It's been a great time.
You are very welcome. Before we go, don't forget that you can keep up to date with all the latest financial news on our website by heading over to moneymag.com.au, or you can get in contact with us using our dedicated email, which is podcast@moneymag.com.au. That's it for this episode of the Friends with Money podcast, Zone, but we'll be right back in your feeds next week. I'm Tom Watson. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.